This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the Emden Studios. Sam Webb, Veronica Rates on the other side of the glass, doing a great job. And joining me here in studio, down one man, because he's injured. Maybe he's just soft. Why do I say that? Because we got a hurt guy sitting right across from me. He showed up anyway. He came wounded.
Yeah.
Talking about Brian Cook from MGO blog.
Yeah.
Brian, how you doing?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm a little under the weather.
Right, but you showed up anyway.
Yeah.
He's playing hurt.
He's playing hurt today.
I'm
just joking with Ed, by the way.
No, you're not.
He's really under the weather.
No, we're going to clip that.
I think he may be hurt because he was supposed to watch the game with me last night, and so I went out and got the best beer in the world, Ab 12, Belge Abbey beer, and he didn't show up. So
you drank all of it?
Well, I drank it with Anthony and Dave, your hockey guys from MGO blog. So yeah. it got consumed, but I was surprised Ed didn't show up. So
Craig Ross, yeah. That's the voice you hear. Everyone knows Craig. Craig has his own fan club. Ladies coming up to me at an event saying, "I love Craig Ross. I love Craig Ross. Tell Craig Ross he's the best." So. There you go.
That's so untrue.
That is not true. I showed you the photos.
Yeah. Everyone has photos.
If I was making it up, Craig, now I gotta find those ladies. Mm-hmm. I'm putting the call out. They have to listen to the MGO blog roundtable. So please call up.
No.
Let
that,
Craig
that
would
be
know.
The most awkward thing.
I mean, we don't have to patch them through over the air. I just need names.
Okay.
Names to pass along to Craig.
He's a married man, Sam.
No, I'm not trying to hook him up. I'm just trying to let him know that he has a fan club. Is all. All right. So. The Wolverines, the Crimson Tide. What do you guys think of this Citrus Bowl matchup?
I honestly have no idea what to think because you remember the first Florida Bowl game under Harbaugh where, like,
Florida didn't play.
Florida's like,
we don't care.
And then the second Florida Bowl game under Harbaugh, Michigan was like,
and Florida wanted to win. They were pissed off.
Well, it was the first year of a new coach. They're like, we're good. We wanted to show it. Right. And Michigan's got guys who aren't even going to get drafted sitting out of the bowl game. So this is the first time that Alabama hasn't made the playoff. What a world.
right?
So they've got six guys who might go in the first round. They got another five or six who may or may not, who would be second or third round candidates. So are they going to play? How much dedication are they going to have to this bowl game? I have no idea. So you could get a situation like, didn't Bama get, like, skunked by Utah back in the day?
Yeah, I think it was it his second year? I think it was Nick's second year where that happened.
No, I think it was...
You said Utah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, his second year. I'll pull it up.
There's a possibility that they come into this game, they got a backup quarterback, their starting tackles aren't playing, and they don't play very well. Michigan wins this game. If they come in kind of full bore, I'm not feeling that great.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. A lot depends on who plays for Alabama. On the other hand, I don't think the Alabama defense is as good as it's been in the past. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been somewhat vulnerable, and I think Michigan can move the ball against them. I don't think Michigan's going to be playing short this year. I don't think guys are going to decide, I'm just going to pass this one like last year, some of which was crazy, some of which is understandable. And so I think we can move the ball. Whether we can do anything even against their offense, even with a backup quarterback, is uncertain. I mean, I don't feel terrible about it. I mean, it's a game that I think fans should at least be somewhat excited about. You know, we didn't have the year we hoped we would have, but we still have a game against a team that's, you know, a top five or six team in all likelihood.
And the first half against Ohio State gives me some confidence about Michigan offensively in this game. That, like you said, I think they'll be able to move the football.
now. Will they have patched some things up defensively for this game? You know, we'll have to see. This is even without Tua. Now, there's a drop off. I don't want to make it sound like there's definitely a drop off. This is still a squad with three receivers that might be the best receiving core in the country, an offensive line that is. Yeah. Craig, I think you could play quarterback for this team and they would score some points.
Not me, but maybe you. I understand. They have a good offense. Our defense has been hard to figure out week by week, and so I don't like our chances from what I've seen against their offense, even with a backup quarterback. On the other hand, I think we can score some points, and maybe if a couple of their guys sit out on offense, we can contain them a bit. I don't know.
I've sort of come Brian Cook's way a little bit here over the course of the season, and definitely in the playoffs. Man, you watch these, the elite teams, so Ohio State. And LSU especially. Mm-hmm. Look, obviously you got to play some defense. You got to have a unit out there that can get some stops, make some key plays, get a few turnovers. But the elite offenses, you aren't going to shut them down. No one's going to shut LSU down. No one's going to shut Ohio State down. You got to put up points. You got to have firepower. You got to be able to get in the track meet with a team like that and not have a sieve for a defense. Like I said, you gotta have, like Ohio State. You saw Michigan move the football up and down the field on them in the first half of the game, but they were able to get off the field. They were able to make some plays, and then Michigan started shooting themselves in the foot. Yeah. You gotta be able to have some defense like that. Same thing happened against Wisconsin, but points, man, firepower. Craig, you gotta have the offense. I think that is what's driving the most successful team.
Well, I mean, if you look around college football today, offenses seem to be way ahead of defenses. I mean, go back early in the season when Texas played LSU. Wasn't that like a 54-46 or something game?
Or LSU and Bama was 46-41.
Yeah. So, I mean, and those are teams with good defensive players and good athletes on defense, but the offenses right now in college are ahead. I think a part of that is rules, that the rules are allowing offenses to do all kinds of stuff, pick plays, blocking downfield on pass plays. There's so much being allowed for offenses to do that it's become difficult for defenses, I think, to really be elite. And even in the Ohio State Wisconsin game, where Wisconsin played pretty good defense for a half, they got smoked in the second. Uh-huh. It was 27-0 in the second half, uh-huh. and Wisconsin plainly is a good defense, but they still just got.
Yeah, they sacked Justin Fields five times, twice.
Mm-hmm.
So in the regular season, five times, sacked them another five times in this
and
game.
They still gave up a ton of points.
Still gave up a ton of points, man. So, Brian Cook, hey man.
Yes.
Brian is under the table at this point and says, I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah, man. Hey, you gotta have one of those explosive attacks but I don't want to minimize the importance of having some playmaking ability on defense. That's why Oklahoma has no shot at winning a national championship. The other three teams do, but I just wanted to acknowledge that I'm coming to your side of the aisle on this.
I don't remember saying this stuff.
I've been listening to you pontificate on.
I like that.
On on spread attacks and it being that it being the way the future in the light. And I do think that.
And now you're coming around.
I'm coming around to having to win games in that way.
All right.
Having to win games in that way, putting up against the elite offenses.
Got to be the last guy in the country.
You got to score 40 to do that. And, I was of the mind that you could win with a shutdown defense. I think the notion of a shutdown defense against the elite offenses of today is a fantasy.
At least under current rules, I think that's right. And who has an elite shutdown defense?
Right.
I don't know who that is
right
at this point in college football. So maybe in the NFL, but But they're playing not spreads, and so yeah, I'm with you on this, Sam. And Brian from
who's gonna win the championship before we move on to Michigan basketball?
Clemson.
You think? Wow, really?
No.
Who do you think, Craig?
I think Ohio State will win, and I think they'll earn their championship if they beat Clemson and LSU. They'll have definitely earned it.
They definitely will have earned it.
And I'm leaning to them slightly. I think that you're right. Any one of three teams could win. I don't think Oklahoma can really.
Yeah, I think LSU. And the reason why, the thing that sets them apart by a slight margin over Ohio State quarterback. I think Joey Burrow is the superior quarterback.
I think, you've got four pretty good quarterbacks, and you've got three that I think will be in the NFL. But I sort of like Trevor Lawrence the best of the three.
He has the most upside.
And certainly if you're an NFL team and you're draft and you have your choice of the three, I think I want Trevor Lawrence.
I could see that, but as far as production this year, yeah. Joey Burrow
has been phenomenal. I assume he's going to win the Heisman.
He's been fantastic. I think it's a no-brainer that he gets the Heisman this year. But Michigan-Bama is going to come down to, sounds like, according to you guys, who plays? Who plays in the game for both teams?
I wouldn't go quite that far. I would say, if Bama has a few guys out, that we can compete, but I'm not predicting that Michigan can win.
Okay.
I think it's going to be it could be a competitive game if they've got a couple of guys out, but if they play their everyone except, Tua, who is obviously out, I think we're probably unlikely to win that game.
All right. We'll get into some Michigan basketball on the other side. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studio, Sam Webb. Veronica Rates on the other side of the glass. So you have MGO Blog Roundtable crew minus one over here. Brian Cook and Craig Ross, and the Wolverines fall on the road in Champaign last night. Speaking of falling on the road, that's every team in the Big Ten so far. Every road team has lost.
Is that right?
Yes. 10-0. The home teams are in the early going as far as the Big Ten conference play is concerned. And I'm curious, were you guys at all surprised by the loss last night to the Illini?
I mean, going into this game, your Michigan's actually a Vegas dog, and they're only favored by one in KenPom. So can't be too surprised, especially when you shoot 3 of 18 from 3. It's just that's a lot to overcome on the road. And they weren't really able to execute their defensive game plan that they've – like I think Illinois' first 20 points were in the paint. And, they've done a really good job of pushing usage into the mid-range, and this was a team that looked ripe for it. But, Feliz is able to get to the basket way too much. Yep. Like, they pulled Dave for Nunez for a large portion of the first half because he got toasted a couple times. And, it just felt like they needed to talk to him or something.
Uh-huh.
And
that's not a defensive move that you think would be –
Right.
An upgrade.
That's not something where you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So, they clearly weren't happy with a couple of those possessions. And, you just kind of get yourself in a hole. And I honestly, Illinois played better than I thought they were capable of. Because you see what they've done this season. They lose to Miami at home on a last-second play, and they kind of gack it up against Maryland.
Well, they were up, I think, 15 in that game.
Yeah, they're
in
up
the
15, and
half.
There's a 13-minute period where they get a bucket.
Yeah.
So, they played well. Coburn, I mean, he hit all of his free throws.
He missed two. I think he was 7-9.
Okay, well, he hit his first six, and I was just like, come on, this guy's been playing organized basketball for 3 years. He's 7 feet tall. He's 600 pounds. And now he's making free throws too. Come on.
Yeah, 7-9 from the free throw line.
Well, he's made, and he coming in the Maryland game, I think he made all of his free throws.
Yeah.
After starting terribly from the line, he started to shoot it well.
I mean, the guy's
a real player.
Yeah, he was the most impactful player on the floor last night.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned hitting his free throws. The guy was, he had 10 boards. He blocked 4 shots. Yeah. I mean, he was a beast.
And I think, you know, Juwan kind of had a bit of a coaching flub because he had a periods of time when he has Castleton out there on Coburn. And they're have a weird substitution pattern where they're pulling him out and they're playing him like through that 12 to 9 minute period and a half where often your starters are sitting. So Michigan has 6 or 7 minutes where it's Castleton. He's picking up a ton of fouls in the second half, and it's just you know, their substitution patterns, I think, got them some advantageous matchups in the post.
Yeah,
it certainly showed up on the glass because, you know, you look at the disparity, Craig. Michigan got out rebounded by 16. And it was the offensive glass, you know, 15 offensive rebounds for Illinois in this game and 16 second chance points. Mm-hmm. I mean, 16 second chance points. And you look at Michigan, 0 second chance points. And that's the game.
Yeah.
That's the game right there, because it's not like Illinois. I mean, they didn't shoot well from distance. They were 1 for 11 from 3.
Yeah. But so the difference there is that they're one of the worst teams in the country at shooting threes. Like, they have Frazier, and then everybody else is awful. So that's something you could expect going into the game, because you have one of the best three-point defenses in the country going up against one of the worst three-point offenses. They're probably going to put up close to a bagel from three. Mm. You know, Michigan coming into this game is shooting 40% on high volume. They get a lot of good looks, especially Franz Wagner, and they hit 3 of 18.
They hit 3 of 18. So, you know, the other occasion where we talked about them shooting this – you know, shooting this, you know, being this abysmal from 3-point range was against Louisville. And, you know, again, you're talking about what are the other ways in which you can get some points and, or at the very least, limit the production of the other team. And it's just too many second chance opportunities for Illinois in this game.
Yeah. Illinois rebounded 41% of their misses, and that's just a ridiculously high number, and was key to this game. What was, as Brian points out, Illinois doesn't shoot it great from three, yet when I went back, I watched this in slow motion between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. last night. We got blown by a dozen times in the half court, and I'm not, and it's hard to figure out why. It would seem the one thing we would not want to do is get beaten off the dribble against a team that isn't going to shoot it great from three. Yet, and it wasn't just one guy; it was six guys were beaten off the dribble, and that was, and once you got beaten off the dribble with their big guys, especially Coburn inside, they're going to score.
Yeah.
And so that was a frustrating part of the game. Aside from the fact we were 3 of 18 from three, and I went back and I thought, because there was some noise, oh, these were bad looks, but I thought they were mostly really good looks. I mean, there were maybe one or two of the 18 that wasn't a great look, but they were mostly just good shots that we missed. I mean,
in the second half,
Howard Juwan said that in the first half he felt they rushed the threes. They were too soon in the clock, but when I went back and looked, I thought, no, these were okay shots, open shots. They might have been early in the clock, but, you know, you want to take open looks. I mean, the frustrating part for me in it was we couldn't seem to find Livers, who, you know, his primary value on a basketball court is his ability to shoot the ball, and he had 6 shots last night. He made 4 of them, and
2 for 3 from 3-point range.
Exactly. And we just couldn't seem to find the ball, find him in spots where he could get decent looks.
I think it's a great point. You know, looking for him, him hunting his shot is another big factor, but is a glaring stat, 4 for 6. But the thing that jumps out to me, and I mentioned this to you in the break, he played 37 minutes and he had 1 rebound. And that has to be a coaching point in practice. I mean, come on. I mean, you got to have, he has to be more active on the glass. I'm sure he would tell you that too.
Yeah, I would say at this point, especially against a team that can board, that probably it makes sense to give Brandon Johns more minutes. If you look on the year, Johns has, I wrote this down on my, he's got 41 rebounds in 136 minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
and, which isn't bad. And Franz has 20 rebounds in 166 minutes. So one.
So
is,
you're saying slide Isaiah to three and play Brandon Moore at the four, get some more size on the court,
right? For
the,
and I think at least the minutes.
Some more rebounding ability on the floor.
Yeah,
I mean,
the minutes probably need to be more balanced right now between Johns and Franz. And, you know, if you look at the shooting, it's, you know, Franz is only 5 of 23 from 3, I think, on the season, which is not good. And Johns is 2 of 9. It's about the same percentage.
Yeah.
But Johns is shooting 47% from the floor, Franz 35%. So at this moment, at least, it doesn't seem to me that it's clear. I mean, Franz may well have more upside, and he may be showing it in practice, but on the floor right now, it seems like their minutes should be a little more balanced.
And, you know, and Craig, hey, I might surprise you. I don't disagree. As a really, really strong believer in what Franz will be, I guess I'm not surprised that it's taking him a minute to find his shooting touch. It's
and
not just the
young.
Rust. It's the, I mean, he's coming off a broken wrist.
He's a very young freshman, and... Johns has been around a little longer. I think Johns is physically stronger because he's a little older and has been in the program.
Well,
so
yeah, I think they need some more rebounding.
And they can't do this. And because that was, you know, one of the two or three reasons why they lost the game.
And Brandon Johns, to your point, he played 8 minutes last night, Craig, and had 4 rebounds.
Yeah.
You remember I just said Isaiah Livers played 37 and had one.
Yeah, so, I mean, so Johns has showed that he's willing to mix it up on the boards, even against big, tough guys, and he's had some success. You know, really, I think in the Iowa game, didn't he have, can you look at the box for Iowa? I think he rebounded really well in that game. And that was
I think he led the team in rebounds with 8, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he had 5 on the offensive boards.
That sounds right. I think he had 8 and 5. 8. Total rebounds, 5 offensive, and I'm pulling them up now.
Yeah, I think
that's right. 8 rebounds, 5 offensive, and 12 points.
Yeah, and so I was surprised that his minutes were so limited in this game, given that he was coming off the Iowa game where he really did go to the boards quite well. And, in fact, I thought that was a difference in an Iowa game where I don't
I mean, he comes in this game and he has an open look from 3. He double clutches and then bricks.
Yeah, he did.
And that's why he only played 8 minutes. Because you can't put a guy in the game who's going to turn down an open shot and then take a bad one. Right? Like, that's always kind of been his thing, right? Like, he comes in and he doesn't have decisiveness, the confidence to
true. But I think part of what has allowed him to maybe, you know, be more productive in this short, I know it's a short sample space, is that they've allowed him to play through mistakes like that.
Well, I mean, he wasn't really bringing a whole lot on the offensive end, and Michigan needed the scoring. So, and I know that Franz isn't making his threes right now, but he's a guy who shot 39% from 3 last year in pretty large sample size and is a 90% free throw shooter.
Yeah, he's a great free throw shooter.
So
he's showing that too.
It's going to happen. It's just... And I think you got to ride it out because he's a guy who clearly has the potential. And, you know, we underrate what he does defensively. I mean, the number of times when people look at Franz and then they're like, nah, is really surprisingly large. He's just like all arms. He's able to he poked a lot of balls loose. You know, he forced some turnovers. Like, I think that, I mean, obviously the rebounding is an issue, but, you know, when you're rebounding is an issue and you're looking at your 3, I don't necessarily think that's the solution.
Yeah.
You were just saying that to get Johns on the floor, right?
I'm saying that, you know,
to slide.
I don't disagree with what Brian said. On the other hand, I feel like the minutes should be more balanced right now and see how this plays through. And as true for anybody playing basketball, the more minutes you play, the more likely it is that you're going to hit something close to your ability. Once you feel like, oh, I've got to go in and I've got to play well, or I'm going to get pulled, You saw that with David DeJulius last year, who couldn't hit the side of a barn. You see it with any player who's looking over his shoulder. And it's why I've argued for, in the past for short benches. I'm not sure I'm arguing that with this team anymore.
Maybe. Good. Yeah. Good.
But I do think that 8 minutes was probably too few in this game when we're getting clobbered on the offensive boards.
I mean, Illinois comes in as the number one offensive rebounding team in the country.
Is that right? They were?
Yes.
Oh, wow. You could see why, I guess. Yeah.
There's always going to be some level of getting hammered on the boards because that's just what happens. And the other part about it is that they throw up so many ugly bricks that
the ball bounces out crazy ways. Like, no, that's true.
How many just thunks off the backboard were they? And they go to, like, Georgie because he's like, ooh, I found this. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously they got to do something about their rebounding issues, but you go into that game expecting that Illinois is going to be something close to 1 of 11 from three, and that they're going to get a lot of second chance points. And then the reason that Michigan can't win that game
is they don't make any shots.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, but maybe that's all it comes down to. I mean, you may be right, and we certainly couldn't make a shot.
I mean, they lose by 9, and if they shoot a crappy percentage from three, 6 of 18, 33%.
Yeah.
That's a tie game. So, yeah. And were the quality of the looks worse than usual? I don't think so.
I thought they got some really good looks, especially in the second half.
Yeah.
I guess I don't remember, as the quality being quite as good. Maybe it was, Craig. I have to watch it again. But in the second half, for sure, I was like, oh, man, these are good looks that just aren't falling.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, those are all really good thoughts. What did you think about the Garza performance in the Iowa game? I mean, isn't that a little surprising? I mean,
this Michigan State used to do this a lot with Ward. So they'd play him 20 minutes a game, and when he was in 20 minutes a game, they would run after makes, and he would get super deep post position, and then there's not really much you can do. So I think a lot of that was Michigan having to relearn the lessons they learned a few years ago about getting back against post players. Yeah. So, Garza, I think he had like 5 buckets in the first 10 seconds of the clock, and that's more of a systematic issue than any particular defender. And then the last against Louisville, Iowa, and Illinois, we've blocked 2 shots in each of these games that turn into buckets for the opponent. Easy buckets.
Yeah.
We got to stop blocking so many shots or like spike them. I don't know what we're doing, but this drives me crazy. But a couple of his buckets were off blocks where Teske packs him and then he just goes right back to him. And he's like, oh, there's no one guarding me anymore because Teske already blocked my shot. And then he puts it in. So, I mean, that performance was really good. He was hitting from everywhere, too. So,
and yet they still lost by double digits.
Well, they're off. I mean, that's the worst defensive team in the Big Ten. Year after year, I mean, I don't get it.
Was it one of you guys that tweeted the video, the McCaffrey?
Oh, no, that was UM Hoops.
Defensive video.
Yeah.
And I just made the mistake of thinking Craig was on Twitter, which he isn't.
I don't even know what that is.
Interesting thing is they play a lot of zone in that game, and Michigan was much more decisive, more of a plan against zone than they had under Beilein ever. So there was one, I think it was a Johns dunk where
the double cut.
Yeah,
on the
where,
backside.
Where,
yeah,
where Livers is also cutting, and Livers has his hand up like, ooh, you should give me the ball. Pulls up a guy, baseline dunk for Johns from Teske. And there were a couple other plays where it's like, okay, this is something designed to go up against zone, which Michigan had none of under John Beilein. Nothing. Passing around the perimeter, jack up a shot late in the clock. Very, very frustrating.
Yeah, I tweeted about that during the game, how comfortable they looked attacking the zone. And what it reminded me of was a game where Beilein did have a plan against the zone, and that was in the Final Four against Syracuse.
Syracuse
could really play a zone, and that team was a good defensive zone team, unlike Iowa, which is,
there were some embarrassing instances of Iowa defense in that game, but I thought more often Michigan was actually testing the limits of their zone, and I think a lot of teams would have the same situation happening to them. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I feel like that has to be a Phil Martelli thing, because, I mean, Juwan's been in the NBA for 20 years, right? Like, mm-hmm. They have some zone.
But they're not playing a 2-3 zone.
But they're not playing a 2-3, right? So, right, so. Like, I feel like all zone things are Martelli's.
Yeah, you know, so, mm-hmm. and, you know, Phil, who we got a chance to talk to again this week, he was, you know, he was talking about the things that he's learning in the process from the NBA influence. Of course it has to be that. I agree with you. The part that he's taken from Juwan, he said, man, I'm a hedge ball screen, hard hedge guy. I'm not an analytics guy. But he said, I'm learning that, you know, a mid-range shot is not going to beat you. And analytics, as long as they aren't overbearing, aren't a bad thing. And so, you know, it seems to be a nice mixture going on there.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably right about that, and Juwan is right about that. What will beat you is getting the ball to the rim, which is what Illinois was able to do.
Well, he said that. He said
And you know, it. Two footnotes. One is that Lewis Garrison, who got just clobbered the head last night. I hope he's okay.
I'm only laughing because I think he is okay.
That's like the worst shot I ever saw an official take in a game.
That was amazing.
I mean, he just got cold cocked.
And that guy's like Godzilla.
Right. But Lewis Garrison, when I saw that he was one of the refs in the game, I just said, oh, man. We were 0-3. We didn't lose that many games last year, but we were 0-3 last year when Garrison reffed. And so now we've lost four straight games when he's reffed. Now, I don't think his refereeing was that bad, and I don't think it was.
I think it's a stretch to point to the refereeing for, I mean,
for, on this game for sure.
They had
zero
fouls for 17 minutes, and then that period early in the first half where they're racking them up, like I couldn't even be mad. I'm like, yep, that's a foul.
Although in the last three games were minus 44 free throws when Garrison's ref. So I, you know, he's not a ref that we've gotten great games out of, but I don't think refereeing had much to do with the game last night.
You should start a site that just, you know, keeps track of referees. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be huge.
Well, I don't know.
I'd subscribe to that service. Yeah,
I don't know. Borowski, who was the lead ref, I think, last, is an excellent ref. So, I mean, I'm not beefing about refs last night.
All right, we got to get to a break. And we're back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studios. Sam Webb, Veronica Rates on the other side of the glass, and the MGoBlog Roundtable crew minus Ed Fang, who we hope is feeling better. Got Brian Cook in studio, who we hope feels better.
Working on it.
Hope Veronica on the other side of the glass feels better. She's working on it as well. Craig, you and I are.
You and I, own, you know.
Hopefully it stays that way.
I hope so.
Hopefully it stays that way for us. But Oregon coming to town. What about the Ducks? What do you guys think of the Ducks?
Well, they're a really, really good basketball team. They have a terrific point guard in Pritchard.
Michigan recruited him.
And he's big and good. And the rest of their team is a solid team. I don't think they've got superstars, but they've got a bunch of guys who can play. They did lose we almost double-headered them. Almost played them twice, right?
Yeah.
Because they were in the Bahamas. I think they lost, Brian said, to
They lost to UNC.
And Gonzaga, didn't they? Did they lose to them?
No, they didn't play Gonzaga. They beat Alabama, I think.
They lost to Gonzaga.
Yeah. It was a fairly close
game.
They
lost to Gonzaga in overtime.
Yeah. All right. It was an overtime game, a game they could have won, and then they lost by two, I think, to North Carolina. I think they're probably a better team than North Carolina, from what I've seen.
Yeah, North Carolina looks rough.
North Carolina, Brian and I both think, is probably a bubble team right now. They just can't. The only guy who can shoot the ball is their point guard.
That's the only thing. I mean, they should have known they were in trouble when they got in two different grad transfers who they're playing like 20 minutes a game. Like, you get one grad transfer and you're like, all right, we can paper this whole over. You get two and you're like,
what's the guy's name who's
Pierce?
Pierce is the guy we
Stephen Pierce, I think. Yeah, he's
that was a good choice.
And they have a guy named, well, he wouldn't be playing for us.
Yeah,
they got a guy named Keeling who's from like Charlotte or something. So those guys are both major parts of the rotation. They lost Bacow.
Yeah, who's, I think, their second best player. Yeah. He had a bad sprained ankle. I don't know how long he's going to be out. So I think Carolina's in trouble. They don't shoot the ball at all, except for Cole. And if your point guard is your best shooter, it's sort of a problem.
But that Gonzaga win should stand up. They beat Washington on the road. That was a pretty good game for them. I watched the back half of that. They looked pretty good.
Yeah, I think Gonzaga's going to not lose much the rest of the year, which is good for Michigan. I think KenPom, you know, as a prognosis right now, I think KenPom has us at 11-9 in the conference and 21-10 overall. That sounds about right to me. It feels about right to me. I think we're going to have a hard time winning on the road. And it's because everyone looks like right now is having a hard time winning on the road in the Big Ten.
You know, I mean, you know, a wild card for Michigan, you know, I think it's twofold. Number one, it is still, and this is a point that Phil Martelli made. He said, look, we don't have everything.
Specified in. Martelli.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just throwing Phil out. Who am I talking about? But he said, we don't have everything in, offensively or defensively. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the install phase of the program is ongoing. And we talked about Franz earlier in the show. Look, Franz Wagner is there physically, but, you know, what he's capable of is not being realized by this team yet. And I can't help but think that's going to make a tangible difference for them.
Yeah, I mean, if he gets to where he just as a shooter where he was last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge difference for Michigan.
You guys tell me, where the hell was the Duncan Robinson that is going nuts in the NBA? Yeah. Where was that?
He made 10 threes the other night, which is franchise. And it was that franchise record.
I've had the exact same thought. Yeah. I'm like, yay, Duncan, I like Duncan. And I'm like, Duncan, why didn't you shoot 60%? Why didn't you do this?
Why did you score a point in the championship game? A point.
All right. Well, you know, I wasn't going to go like that harsh.
I'm just like, man. If a third of the production from that game that he just had, and it's a much different game.
Is he? I mean, is he the only D3 player who's ever played an NBA game?
I don't know. It can't be.
I wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, you know, probably back in like the 50s, where they just occasionally pick guys up like mid game because. They're barnstorming.
Yeah.
A guy like Frank Selvey, where did he play? He scored 100 points against Grand Canyon State. I know that.
The Fort Wayne.
Veronica?
Ice Dogs.
My music.
Fort Wayne was the Pistons before they became the Detroit
there
Pistons.
There you go. That means it's time for us to go.
Should we be silent?